Hey, thanks.
Thanks.
So I've always kind of felt that my friend's apartment in Brooklyn was home, even though I sleep on the couch there.
Home is where I make home.
Like on a shelf where you could go and take something and come back.
I've also been asked, would you go back to Puerto Rico to live?
And I'd always dreamed of going back there, because that's always what I have thought of as home. But...
So I thought, I must never allow this to happen again.
For me, it's a feeling that comes from the bottom of my feet up. The home is the land.
I'll keep moving. And I do.
Welcome to Hitchhiking Off the Map. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller.
Well, this show is about love. The journeys that are involved with love, which is sort of like saying it's about air or animals. I mean, what does that mean exactly? One of those squishy, non-controversial, non-political topics, at least for people for whom it's not a political issue.
Well, so?
So, journeys and love. What comes to mind?
Well, what comes vividly to my mind is our first date. I mean, that's a long time ago. Yeah, it's a long time ago, but it's really very vivid. We went to a movie. We went down to the cheap movie theater in the Chicago Loop. I guess it was after rehearsal. I don't know, but
the Clark Theater. Yes.
Yeah. Was that really 50 cents?
Yes.
God. And I don't remember what we saw, but I know that something had me so completely wired and shook on our way back. I think that some part of my mind just had gotten a little glimpse through decades of the future and knew that this was really going to be serious. And so I was, in one way, I was just tremendously elated and happy. In another, I was just scared blue. So I was watching all those lights whapping by, and I was just shuddering and weeping. And I think everybody must have thought that we'd had some kind of...
I was not quite sure exactly how to read it, but I figured it out. So
Well, we got there. Yeah.
Maybe we need to break this down into the components. We asked one group of friends about just one limited but concrete aspect of that phenomenon and wrote down what they said. The first kiss. Remember this. Remember this. Remember.
Lips.
Wet.
Soft.
Hard lips.
Intense.
Different.
Hot.
Weird.
Tree bark.
Old books.
Sand.
Perfume.
Grease paint.
Germs.
What's his name?
What's next?
Is that long enough?
Tongue.
Tongue.
Braces.
Mexican.
Saliva.
Who's watching?
Open your eyes.
Scared.
Is that it?
Strange.
How to breathe.
Wanting more and more and more.
Remember this. Remember this. Remember this.
Don't stop.
Warm.
Shame.
Need.
Noses.
Teeth.
Breath.
It's happening.
We met Julie and Bill about 8 years ago at their wedding. Their priest was a friend of ours, and we were meeting her before the service to have coffee and catch up news. We were introduced and said hello, and it wasn't until much later that we found out about the journey that brought them together.
I graduated from high school in 1960. In the 60s, women had a choice of what they wanted to do with their lives. At least in my family, you could be a nurse or you could be a school teacher. And so I went down, I was going to be an elementary education major, and I was going to save all, kids. And my first day on campus, I found a class that I wanted to take, only you couldn't take it unless you were a music major. And I said, okay, I'll be a music major. So for very happily, for 2 months, I was a music major and met all these strange, weird people over in the music school. And then I went home for Thanksgiving and told my mother what I had done. And my mother looked at me and said, "What are you going to do? Be a lady band director?" And there was so much sarcasm and cynicism and untrusting of me and the whole schmear. So I said, "Oh, I don't know. I guess not." And then I just kept taking music classes, but I wasn't a music major anymore.
So the first fall, I went to a little school in Pennsylvania, Dickinson College, and I had a lot to learn, an awful lot to learn. I enjoyed being away from home, but every time I came back, you almost get caught back up into that family cocoon.
Well, he said when he went to college, he had a lot to learn, and basically where he learned it was out of the airport and not in the classrooms, and he was cutting a lot of classes and going out and learning how to fly.
I had two afternoon classes, and the best time to fly was also in the afternoon. Now, you take an 18-year-old boy, and here he wants to fly and has always wanted to fly, and he's got German and calculus in the afternoon. Which is he going to do? Flying one. So it ended up that they sent home a mid-semester report in which I was close to failing both those courses. And of course, Dad called and said what was wrong. And of course, I couldn't tell him I was learning how to fly. So I said I was just having trouble.
Talking to Bill and Julie, you get the feeling of two young people looking without quite knowing it for something special. And they found each other.
The first time?
61.
Somewhere my freshman year in college, I was in the band, and I had broken up with whoever it was I was going with at the time, and I looked around, you know, it's a good source of men in the band, so I looked around the band, and there was this cute guy in the trumpet section. So I asked the woman next to me, who was a sophomore, I said, "Who's that guy back there?"
Moi?
Yes.
Well, I had noticed her, and because the flute section is a section that's just rife with attractive women. So the first place you check when you go to have a new crop of incoming freshmen is the first thing that you check is the flute section. And this, she was pretty attractive.
So the next band rehearsal, she reported back that he wasn't going with anybody. And I said, "Well, can you get word to him that I think he's cute?" And she said, "Sure, she could do that."
So we started going out in March of 61. And that was it.
We were madly in love. It was fun. It was fun. We dated through the end of freshman year, all the way through sophomore year, into junior year. We'd gotten pinned, and the Christmas of our junior year, we got engaged. And somewhere along in the following summer, I guess I was feeling trapped or something. So we came back to school and broke up, which sounds very clean and very simple. It was not. It was very messy, and it was horrible amounts of tears.
It was an extremely big surprise, and it was grim. It was really grim. We always seemed to have a link that was something more than just, it seemed to be a psychic link in a way. It can be frightening because you're always sensitive to someone that at times you may not want to be real sensitive to.
So we had a horrible senior year, and I would get so lonesome sometimes I'd go hang outside the Music Annex building where he was practicing and just sort of look forlorn, just because I missed him so much. And so we spent a little time together, so it wasn't so horribly grim. But graduation came and commencement, and we kissed goodbye one last time under the end of the arch in June of 1964 and went on our ways. That was it.
And that was it. Except that 38 years later, They're sitting in our living room together, laughing.
Because we did actually see each other.
Yes, we did. Yeah, kind of.
Julie got married to somebody else, got divorced, became a school teacher, hated it, moved to California, worked, met people, joined a loose-knit, fun-loving Wiccan church, which is a pretty normal part of Northern California.
Just did a lot of stuff, learned a lot of stuff, and never got married again.
Bill got a job as a band director in a tiny town in Michigan. Loved it, got married, had a son, divorced, remarried, divorced, decided being married wasn't worth it, and he'd always been flying, so he went east, got a job as a pilot with U.S. Airways.
To make a long story short, in all that intervening years, I always felt close to her. There was times when there was one night I can remember in particular, and I actually knew, what kind of car she'd had, because before we made our last communication, she told me what kind of car she had bought. So I went through driving through town trying to see if she might have come to town for some reason. I mean, that's how strong that feel was. Then I said to myself, Bill, you're out of your mind. This is ridiculous. So I went home. So then I might as well, I'm talking, I'll tell what happened. I had been working, flying for the commuter part of US Air. And I got home late one night. And I had a waking dream. This was in September. It would have been September of
93.
And it was a dream. It was as real as you and I sitting here. I had, to my memory, I had never, ever had a dream like this. And we were sitting in this room like a train station. And she was talking very earnestly to me. But her voice sounded like a tape recorder running backward. So I couldn't understand what she was saying. And I would lean forward and I was, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to say? And she would be very earnestly trying to tell me something, but I couldn't understand. So when I woke up, I was very upset because here is this woman I've been thinking about for 29 years trying to get a hold of me.
Bill decided to contact her. But the college had lost touch with her. He remembered her brother had gone to a Big Ten school. He started calling alumni societies and he got her brother's address. He looked at it, thought, oh, this is ridiculous. Tossed it in a stack on his desk.
Well, that year was the year I decided that I was going to do a ritual for a year to find my partner. And if I could find my partner in a year, then all well and good. But if I couldn't, then that was the sign that I was going to be single the rest of my life. And that was okay. It was like in the book Franny and Zooey, the prayer without ceasing. I was praying all the time I was awake and probably most of the time I was asleep. If the wind came up, I would ask the wind to help me find my partner because wind travels all over the world. If I was beside a river, I asked the river to carry the message to my partner that I was looking for him. And so he's having a dream of us sitting in a waiting room. I think that's hysterical, the waiting room. Yes, we've been waiting for a number of years here. But I still didn't know who it was that I was waiting for. And so I just kept putting it out. Everything, just prayer without ceasing. Until?
I had gotten home about midnight, maybe 1 o'clock. I just collapsed into bed. And this is where fact and fiction, or fact and thought, sometimes are interchangeable. But it was like I got out of the bed and the sun had already begun to rise and had begun to come down through the windows. So I started coming up the stairs and this was real. I have to say, this was real. And I look up the stairs and there's this figure at the top of the stairs. And I looked up there and I wonder who the heck is in the house. So I started up the stairs and I got maybe 3 steps away and I looked up and here was her. And she didn't look like I remembered her. She had the beginnings of crow's feet around her eyes. And she was just as pretty as I remembered, but she was older. She was as old as she would have been. And I looked at her, and I can remember I looked at her, and she was smiling. She had this wonderful smile on her face. And I asked her this, how long have you been here? And she looks with that smile, and she says, a very long time. At that instant, I woke up.
Bill notes, by the way, that the airlines require very strict drug testing.
Oh, yeah. Random drug testing and regular drug testing. There was absolutely no... I hadn't even had a half a beer in 4 days, because you can't drink when you're flying.
He found the address again. He wondered, what do I do if she's dead? What if she's happily married? Finally, he wrote a note to her brother.
So I had a message shortly after this, and it was from my brother saying, Bill Middleton is looking for you. Do you want to be found? And I swear to you, my heart went, woo! It just leaped out of my chest. And I thought, oh, yes, indeed. Yes, yes, I do want to be found. Yes, this is the time is correct, and I do want to be found.
They started writing. They wrote all summer. Julie in a remote cabin where the solar power would only allow her computer to run an hour a day. And finally, she said, come visit.
It was one of those mileposts in your life. You know that after the next 20 minutes, you know, your life is going to change, and it's going to change significantly. This is a biggie, and we both knew it. He knew it sitting on the plane. I knew it standing there hopping up and down at the gate. And he got off the plane, and he came loping across the tarmac, and I fell in love with him again. And we had talked about how we were going to greet each other at the airport. You know, are we going to shake hands? You know, what is exactly going to happen? We decided probably we would do a slight hug, and then that would be it, you know. But we kind of grabbed each other by the elbows on both sides, and then we were hugging, and then we were kissing. So we were hugging and we were kissing, and one of the first things I said to him was, you smell the same. I swear to you, I remembered how he smelled. I told his sister once that I sometimes think I married him because of the way he smells. So it took us half an hour of hugging and kissing and talking and more hugging and more kissing to get away from the gate. We finally got out to the car park, and it took us another half hour to get out of there because we couldn't let go of each other. We were just, you know, just wrapped around each other.
We just immediate.
We just more or less walk
right into
almost
each other.
Straight into each other's arms.
And again, I agree with her. I knew that when I got on that airplane that my life would never be the same.
So I drove him up to the cabin in the woods, and we spent the next 5 days catching up and doing therapy, literally doing therapy. All of this wonderfulness that we had in college, I had repressed. I had put into a deep, dark canyon that I used to have dreams about. It was a recurring dream about this canyon. And that's where I had buried all of it. The second night he was there, I said, will you marry me? And he said, oh, of course. And that was the end of that. So then after 5 days, he went back to Philadelphia, and I was staying up there. And we spent the whole next year flying back and forth between California and Philadelphia. And then in the spring, this was August 20th of 1994, 30 years after we had graduated from college and split up. 30 years we had been apart and on our different journeys. And now we're on our journey together.
Of course, you can never be certain of the whole truth about a couple, except for the radiance. I ask them, how have you acclimatized?
That's a curious question. I look at that question as almost as if we had progressed in a parallel journey. There were many things that I had to learn. There were many things that I had to do. There was many parts of the the journey, the life journey, that needed to be accomplished before we could have been together in a way that would have been mutually warm, loving, and supportive.
We both feel like this is a nice-sized miracle that's happened here. We talk a lot about if we had not broken up, if we had gotten married 30 years ago, what would have happened? Would we be at the same point? Would we still be married? Who knows? I am not still married to my first husband. He's not married to his first wife. So chances are probably that we were too young, we were too, both of us, too unsure of ourselves, that we really needed these 30 years. It would have been nice if it only been 20 years, but well, we really needed these years apart to go out into the world and gather the fruits of the journey to ourselves so that now we are who we are, where we are, starting on this part of the journey together.
I also frequently would have a feeling of driving somewhere. And I would be driving to somewhere, a town or something, but I wouldn't have a map. And frequently I would make a turn, go down this road, and something would tell me, you're not on the right road. So then you turn around and go back to where you were, and you continue on the main road. And then you try this road, and finally a road would feel right, and that'd be where you're supposed to go.
In Sebastopol, we were talking with Julie and Bill Middleton. If you know her, you might call her Jess.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
By the way, Julie Jess is the editor of a wonderful song anthology that we'd like to give an enthusiastic, unsolicited plug for. It's called Songs for Earthlings, and it's a huge anthology of songs and chants about Earth spirituality.
Songs for Earthlings.
Yeah, you can find it at your local goddess shop. And if you don't have a local goddess shop, then try Amazon or one of those.
A lot of controversial stuff in there, of course, like trees and flowers.
We hope you'll contribute a story of your own. It might become an interview or a short phone call-in or a dramatic sketch.
Journeys about love or sex or that stuff. These are the stories Hollywood tries to tell us, but I think we could probably do better telling our own. Everything, it seems, in the movies is either Eros is really silly or Eros is absolutely fatal. And I don't think it has to be that.
Visit our website at www.independenteye.org. I is EYE, and drop us an email.
Well, next story. Is there a difference between erotic love, conjugal love, and parental love? It occurred to me that obviously some things, but learning to be loved, learning to accept love, not just grab it and run with it, but just accept it, that is hard.
For some people, it's hard to believe it's possible. Here's the story. It's from our show Family Snapshots, which we really like. It's a true story. It's not mine. It's a friend's.
This is Surprise.
The first time I knew my parents loved me, I was very tiny. We were going somewhere in the car. I was in the back seat and my brother shut the door, but it didn't latch. And my dad started the car and started off, and my mom said, "Oh, we've got a surprise." And that's when I leaned on the door and fell out. I don't remember landing. Or pain. Just the car rolling off down the street and me thinking, what's the surprise? My brothers are gonna get the surprise. And the car stopped. And both doors flew open like beetle wings. And these two frantic angels came sailing toward me. And I was so happy.
And then, of course, I thought, well, I guess I'm supposed to cry. So I did. I don't remember what was the surprise.
It's okay.
Oh, honey, now this is going to hurt a little. Will I clean it?
Just an accident. Wasn't your fault.
Maybe. I was so scared.
Life. Maybe life. Life was one hell of a big surprise.
That was Surprise. Joining Elizabeth were Lauren Waters and Paul Meredith. And for the story, we'd like to thank our longtime performing colleague, Camilla Shade, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It's a true story. Thank you, Camilla.
This is a production of The Independent Eye. For CDs of our shows or to contribute stories, visit our website, www.independenteye.org. We really want to hear about your journeys.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts and by the Hitchhikers Guild, which can be you. Visit our website or call us at 1-800-357-6016 to be asked in a very nice way for money.
We really do need to keep our equipment working and buy flower bulbs for our gophers to eat.
And this is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. Have a good week. And maybe think about going someplace you haven't been, or just take a different route to the grocery store. There might be something amazing there that you'll never forget.
The feeling of being away from home for me was a release. Getting out from under, being who you are, like the first steps on a journey. Or you're like the fool card in the tarot deck. You're taking that first step. Now, you may fall off the cliff, but you're still making your first step.